At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine crisis. Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, is traveling. He's in Israel with me, and we're very pleased to be joined by Rabbi Yaakov Bleich, the chief rabbi of Kiev and Ukraine. Now in Hungary, after days and weeks of struggling with the crisis across the border from all of these states, everyone in Europe is close to Ukraine, and the rabbi is extremely close. Rabbi, a very good evening to you. My audience wants to hear right now, what does Ukraine need? What do the people of Ukraine need? What do the people, especially you're helping escape the war zone, need? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Everybody needs one thing, and that's for Putin to stop this war. That's what Ukraine needs. That's what the people of Ukraine need, and that's the people I'm trying to help escape and evacuate. That's what everybody needs, just Putin to stop the war and to sit down and negotiate and understand that, you know, that it's not a question of Ukraine, giving in to him or him dictating these or those, but to understand that this is a senseless war that's killing people for no reason whatsoever. Whatever his intentions were when he started it, they were not reached, and he wasn't able to achieve what he wanted, and just give up and sit down by the table and negotiate a normal deal where everyone goes back to where they belong and behaves themselves.
Malcolm?
I was yesterday in the middle of the night here in Israel at the airport to greet a plane of 150 refugees who came from Ukraine. And what was most interesting is there was no luggage unloaded. Nobody had anything more than plastic bags, paper bags, whatever they had on their backs, some with little children. So these are truly refugees in every sense who are coming with nothing and starting to rebuild their lives, many young people. But amongst 150, there were 23 men. So tell us a little bit about what is the number of refugees now? What is the situation? You were in Poland yesterday. What is the situation on the border there and on the border with Hungary?
So first of all, what I've been working since this war broke out was to evacuate people from Kiev and other cities, including Cherkasy, Uman, Nezhin. I've been working with Vinnytsia, Korostin, Vasilkov, many, many other cities throughout Ukraine that have turned to us and asked us to help them evacuate. So that was the main thing I was doing, was evacuating people to the border of Hungary. The reason why we were using the Hungarian border, because it was an easy border to walk through. There's one border here that's very good, quiet, they don't have to wait long. We started with the borders of Lviv, going, from Lvov, and the borders over there are atrocious. People have to wait sometimes 10, 12, 15 hours to get through the border. It's freezing, you have to stand outside. So we found this border to Hungary, which is a very quiet and small border, and that's where we've been taking the people. So the truth is that there have been waves of refugees. And the way it works is that some of the cities thought that they were pretty safe, and then suddenly when bombing started, they all ran. So let's say a city like Kharkiv, which is mostly a Russian-speaking city, they probably thought they were safe and they didn't think Putin would bomb them because he was coming to, quote-unquote, liberate them from the neo-fascists of Ukraine, but sure enough, when he started bombing those cities, the people started running and they hadn't prepared for it. So you had waves of refugees coming from different cities and then traveling west to get out of the country. Most of the people that are leaving are the women and the children, since men between the age of 18 and 60 cannot leave and they have to stay to fight or for the draft, if it ever comes into effect or if they're ever drafted. So the borders also had that. We were at the borders yesterday in Poland. They told us it was a quiet day. Now, we saw people walking across. There was a minimum of 5,000 people a day walking through the smaller border, Medyka. The larger border had this massive, massive, I don't know if it was a mall or an outlet mall, a massive place full of thousands of beds. And what we did was just walking around saying hello to people, where you're from, where you're going. And what really, really was really, really fascinating was that all of the people there said they want to go back home. I mean, as you mentioned, Malcolm, most of them left with the clothes on their back, maybe with a small shopping bag and not more than that. I must say that Poland has been unbelievably hospitable to them. And you have unbelievable amount of volunteers coming and helping them with food and clothing and rides to where they have to go. It's really something, a sight to see. At the end of the day, however, what's happening is that these people who, you know, who's the war against? So when the war started, it was a war against the Ukrainian army, but very quickly it turned to a war against Ukrainian people. And now that's what it's indiscriminate bombing. Yesterday, you know, a hospital was bombed. And we saw that was the tendency where it was going, that he was going to do to Ukraine or try to do to Ukraine what he did in Grozny or in Chechnya and what they did in Syria. And that's something that's really, 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 it's frightening to just think about cities destroyed. So that's what the refugees are coming from, many different places, from many different cities. We today, this morning, finally got out a family that the woman works for us. The son was a student in our school, and they were stuck in a city, a suburb of Kyiv, Irpin, which is like back and forth between the Russians and Ukrainians. Impossible to walk out on the street. Four times I sent in special forces people to go and try and get them out. And today, finally, this morning, we got them out. It was impossible for them to get out. But this is a city where people are living with no electricity, no water, no heat for the last week. I got a call yesterday from an orphanage that's also situated in one of these cities outside of Kyiv. And they're asking if anybody can help them to evacuate the kids from the orphanage. It's very, very, very sad that so many people have become refugees in such a short time in 2022. And it's like, you know, the world lies silent, sort of, to an extent. I'm saying, I know they're sending them arms, but and nobody's really getting up to the plate and saying, you know, that what can we do to stop this?
Rabbi, the reports we get from London papers are that humanitarian corridors are announced and then the Russians open fire, or fire descends and breaks off the ability to get out. Once people manage to get out of the Kyiv area, for example, or Kharkiv, is there transportation for them? They can't walk all the way to the border. How do they reach the border, Rabbi?
So there are a lot of organizations that are working with this type of evacuations, including trains. By the way, the Ukrainian train system has been unbelievable working with the evacuation trains. They're called evacuation trains, and these trains are free for anyone to come. It's women and children first and men last, which means the men usually can't get on because the trains just get packed quickly. But the trains have been unbelievable in taking people to the borders from many of these cities. I agree with you that many of these humanitarian corridors almost seem like traps, like death traps. You know, they start going out and then they start shooting. But many people I've met, we met yesterday a group of students that were evacuated from Kharkiv immediately when the bombing started to Lviv. These were students of the Culture and Arts University in Kharkiv. They were hosted later by the Culture and Arts University of Lviv. And now they're all being hosted by different Culture and Arts universities throughout Poland. But they had organized, they ran, and then once they got to Lviv, they all organized together. It's very difficult, very, very difficult, because you couldn't get buses. Like from the beginning of the war, it was impossible to get buses to go out there and evacuate people because they were afraid. I had to get them military escorts for the buses that I do. I get military escorts to escort them in and out of the city of Kyiv every day. And sometimes at the beginning, we were getting armed guards on the buses. But even then, the buses would only go, you know, you're paying a premium, probably 10 times the price of what you would pay in peacetime to get these buses to run and evacuate people. But basically what I looked at it is that you're saving lives. And I took a page out of World War II when people were paying per head, right, just to save lives. And that's what you got to do. Money becomes insignificant during a war when you're saving lives. And this is what it is. Well, the money is just blowing.
Malcolm, I witnessed it yesterday with Pastor Hagee, Christian Center for Israel and the Cornerstone Church. He's organized millions of dollars to help pay for the planes and escort people out. But what is the situation in the cities themselves? Is there a food shortage? Is there a lack of, do they have access still to food in the main cities? And concurrent, why everybody knew this was coming. Why didn't more people take advantage of the opportunity to leave when it was easier to do so? Is it human nature that we have seen so many times in the past? Mm-hmm.
So let me answer your questions first, Risha, the first question first about the food shortages. The food shortages are coming. Everybody feels them coming. Everybody knows they're coming. And it could be that Putin knows they're coming as well. And that's part of his sort of, you know, so to speak, plan is to starve them out, right? But there are food shortages in the eastern part of the country for sure. And I'm talking about, you know, basics like flour, sugar, oil. In many cities, it's very, very hard to get. We try to get, you know, for humanitarian aid, just to distribute it. And I spoke to some of the largest supermarket distributors and chains in Ukraine, and they said that they don't even have any, you know, stock because they're just selling out to people as they come, 1 kilo at a time, right? So there's definitely is going to be a shortage. There are going to be shortages. And it's felt already in many, many stores and many places. There are many of the staples that you cannot get already. So definitely there are shortages and they will continue. Don't forget, Ukraine is now, their ports have been closed for close to 3 weeks. Now, even though they're a food producing country, which means they're a very highly agricultural producing country and a net exporter of most grains. However, because of the war and the bombings, it's very, very difficult to get any industry really moving and working the way it should. Also, the problem of the bombing, so it's very hard to get trucking and stuff imported from outside countries. So there is definitely a food shortage, and it's going to get worse as time goes on if this war doesn't end quickly, which we hope it will. Your second question.
About why they didn't leave.
Why people didn't leave. Okay, Malcolm, you said it. You hit the nail on the head, and I'll tell you something very, very frightening to me, because I'm doing this every day. Okay, for the last since last week, Monday morning, I've been sending buses every single day from major cities. And I see waves. Today, many of the, and you know, we coordinate. There's other organizations doing it. We coordinate because sometimes I have an extra bus, they have extra people and stuff. We'll, you know, share the buses and send people to each other. We have witnessed over the last 2 days a tremendous fall in the number of people being evacuated from Kiev, which is frightening. It's very frightening. Now, why is it? Because people say, listen, nothing happened until now. Who said anything's going to happen? And I'll tell you even more than that, Malcolm. I prepared a refugee camp, which was prepared 2 weeks before anything started. A week before the war started, the Americans said Tuesday night is when it's happening. On Tuesday night, I convinced members of my community to evacuate from Kiev. A couple of people went. On Thursday, I was still in Kiev at that time. I forced them onto buses. I said, we're out of here. And I got 100 people out of Kiev to our refugee camp, which is 100 miles west of Kiev, was anyway. And when nothing happened, you know, over the weekend, everybody just came back home. They said, nothing's happening. And then on Wednesday, when we said tonight is the night, again, those same families that left the Tuesday previously went out. On Thursday morning, I couldn't find a way to evacuate them after the bombing started. I couldn't find the bus. And I called, at that time I was in the States already because I left last day there were civilian flights. And I went to the United States for my safety. And I started calling and I had my people calling for buses and there were no buses. So I had everyone take cars, vans, whatever you can, whatever moves. They ran out. We evacuated them. They came to this camp, which is 100 miles west of Kiev, thinking that would be safe there. And sure enough, by Friday, we had to evacuate them again because the Russian soldiers were coming in through Chernobyl, which is like right down the block from us. And that's what happened. And on Friday, we couldn't do it. So Saturday morning, I was on the phone all night Friday night from New York. On Saturday morning at 7:09 a.m., my buses, you know, the whole convoy left the camp. And at 7:34, a bomb fell right outside, which shattered the windows. Didn't fall inside the camp, but right outside the camp and shattered the windows of some of the buildings in the camp. So, you know, they got out of there just in time. And I took them to Western Ukraine. Now, obviously, whoever is able to leave the country was leaving already on Thursday and Friday. But since then, since that Monday last week, I've been every day getting people out. And I spent, and Malcolm, you'll appreciate this, Shabbos afternoon, I spent with my wife and my children making calls to convince people to leave, that they have to get out because their lives are in danger. That's what we did Shabbos after Shabbos meal.
Rabbi.
So, you know, this is what it was.
Rabbi Yaakov Bleich, Chief Rabbi of Kiev and Ukraine. Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organization, Ukraine Crisis. The scale of it, the scale of it. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.